This hour of the Michael Medved Show is brought to you by Heider Construction.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when there's evidence that maybe, just maybe, the crisis that we are all facing, the difficulties that we are all hoping to overcome, may actually be bringing people together and allowing people to put aside some of the negativity and the partisanship and the polarization and the bitter divisions that we've always had. Even Gavin Newsom, one of the most left-wing, left-leaning governors in the country, actually has a statement that he's working well with the federal government. That's a good thing. And there are also celebrities, yeah, including one who was a former California governor, who are stepping up and doing more than singing out of tune. They're actually making a meaningful contribution to helping this situation. It's not all sunshine and roses, however. Obviously not in a situation like this. There is new writing and evidence that, well, you know what? This social distancing may not be over at the end of April. It may not be over at the end of May. It may not be over at the end of the year. That what we really are going to need is a round of special limitations of our activity and of our socialization, and that's going to last for several years. We're going to speak to the scientist who is projecting that future, because we ought to confront it honestly, even as much as people may loathe it. There are also questions about buses. Are buses a good place to shelter from infection? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Enclosed space? And with the presence of lots and lots and lots of homeless people on buses and public transport, a good place to contract coronavirus? So what do you do about public transportation? We'll be talking to the Washington Policy Center about that issue as it impacts one of the epicenters for coronavirus, which, of course, is the city of Seattle. And then we'll also be talking to the leader of a group of prominent academics, a Harvard professor, who says we don't need more of the stand down. We don't need to surrender. We don't need to freeze in place. What we need to beat this virus is mobilization. So what does that mean? We will get to that with Dr. Danielle Allen coming up on the Michael Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. First, there was Gavin Newsom. Actually, let's play the segment with Jake Tapper first, because this is really news. You know the old story. If a dog bites man, it's not news. If a man bites dog, it's big news. Okay, if Gavin Newsom or any of the liberal governors in the country have some kind of complaint about President Trump or about his administration, that's not news. That happens every day. But here is breaking news on CNN with Jake Tapper. Listen to the way that the governor of the nation's largest and in many ways most liberal state talks about the president of the United States and his administration. Listen.
I've talked to officials throughout the country who have said that they have to temper their remarks and what they say about the federal government response for fear that President Trump will punish the citizens of their state if he considers them to be a complainer. You and President Trump seem to have been working collaboratively. He praised you yesterday. Do you find yourself, by necessity, tempering what you say in terms of any issues you might have with the federal response?
I've been consistent, and Jake, you know this. We've been dealing with historic wildfires and droughts out in the West here in California. And I've always said, I've said it back a year ago, this is not time to bicker. I don't care who's up and down, whose polls are looking better than someone else's, or who wants to run for president or who doesn't. When it comes to times of crisis, we need to raise above the partisanship. And I've extended always an open hand, not a closed fist in those circumstances. And this is no different. But let me just be candid with you. I'd be lying to you to say that He hasn't been responsive to our needs. He has. And so as a question, as a sort of an offer of objectivity, I have to acknowledge that publicly. And the fact is, every time I've called the president, he's quickly gotten on the line. When we asked to get support for that mercy ship in Southern California, he was able to direct that in real time. We got 2,000 of these field medical sites that are up, almost all operational now in the state because of his support. And those are the facts. We always want more. I could criticize this or that. At the end of the day, we're just trying to focus on developing a relationship of trust as a matter of course, because there's just too many Americans, 40 million that live in this state, that deserve us to get together and get along.
Okay, isn't that refreshingly sane? I mean, it's not what you expect from Gavin Newsom necessarily, but good for him. And again, there are reasons why, if you look at the polling, when you ask people across the country, they have a enthusiastic approval of the way President Trump is handling this, about 60% approval of the president, but about 80% approval of their local governors, because most of the governors, with very few exceptions, have stepped up. Now, one of those governors stepped up yesterday. His name was Ron DeSantis. And the story came out today that Ron DeSantis actually was provoked to do that with a phone call from Donald J. Trump. And Trump was a key early supporter of DeSantis for governor of Florida. He went and campaigned for him, helped him get elected. So he listened to the president. And the president played a positive role in getting DeSantis to do the kind of order that we're going to need everywhere. And there was another phone call the president made, and we didn't even know about it, but apparently he spoke to the Mohammed bin Salman, the prince, ruler de facto of Saudi Arabia. And he spoke, I believe, to Putin himself or to officials in Russia. And because of the president's persuasion, he would have us believe, and it may be true, that the Russians and the Saudis have signaled, the president reports, more of an agreement, so they won't have this oil price war going on with the price of oil dropping and dropping and dropping. So it's been a great opportunity where the stocks for oil companies have skyrocketed today, and the markets were up. They were up somewhat substantially. They're up now about 200 points, and that's certainly a welcome change from yesterday. There's another segment. And another indication of people maybe coming together and working together. There had been a discussion about the president meeting with Joe Biden. And basically, Joe Biden had been asked by a number of commentators, why doesn't he speak to the president directly rather than just complaining from his basement? And Biden said, yeah, he'd like to speak to the president. So the president was asked about it. And the president said, yes, I'd be delighted to speak to Joe Biden. I understand he's a nice guy. And, okay, this is more positive. Because, of course, these two are going to be running against each other for president of the United States. I mean, with the Democratic convention now officially, that happened just a while ago. They're not going to be convening a Democratic convention on July 13th. It's going to be postponed for a month nearly, and it's going to be postponed, so it's just 1 week before the Republican convention. And the idea that either convention should go forward like a typical convention, they are talking about the possibility of making this a virtual Democratic convention. But they would still have an opportunity for Joe Biden and his vice presidential running mate, whoever it is, to do some kind of big speech. Though, are they really going to be able to do that big speech in the Milwaukee Arena? What's fascinating about this, and this actually story says a lot about America. It really does. We're a wonderful country. We have a lot going on. The Democrats had made arrangements for the arena in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, based upon the basketball season, because everybody knows, or people who follow the NBA at all, the best record in the NBA is the Milwaukee Bucks. They're doing great. They're expected to play deep into the playoffs. And one of the difficulties that they have now is with the NBA season postponed and with the Bucks very likely to be playing in the playoffs if they ever do get back to playing, they couldn't guarantee the Democrats that this arena would be available because there are priorities, a Democratic convention, but then there are NBA playoffs. And which do you think would be likely to get a bigger TV audience? Really? Of course, the NBA playoffs. So they're trying to finesse this whole thing. My strong guess would be that neither one of the conventions is going to go forward, at least not the way it normally has. Another encouraging story, breaking news, this just from the Wall Street Journal. 1 million N95 masks are coming from China. And they're on board the New England Patriots plane. The Massachusetts governor, Charlie Baker, he's a Republican, struck a deal for supplies, but he needed a way to transport them. And the result was a tense saga and a shipment on the NFL team's 767. Okay, made by Boeing, right? The story of this remarkable delivery, based on documents and interviews with people involved in the operation, is a window into the frenzied scramble by states to acquire life-saving equipment needed to battle the coronavirus pandemic. The process involves not just tracking down goods, but also tapping the intermediaries and calling in favors to navigate a dense global bureaucracy that the pandemic has virtually paralyzed. Well, good for Governor Baker in Massachusetts. And by the way, and good for a former governor whose name is Schwarzenegger. What did Schwarzenegger do? He just donated $1 million worth of masks to hospitals. Now, this is a beautiful thing. And the same way that there are a lot of people on the right who despise Arnold Schwarzenegger, just despise him. People on the left who despise him do. There's a lot of people who despise him. But the truth of the matter is, reacting to Arnold Schwarzenegger when he's donating $1 million worth of masks is like reacting in a hostile way to Mike Lindell of MyPillow, who I'm proud to be associated with, when he is providing 75,000 new masks a day in his factory. That's just pretty amazing. Okay, in terms of the story of the Boston Patriots, the New England Patriots, working with Robert Kraft, their owner, who, remember, had his own bad publicity recently, and Charlie Baker, the governor of Massachusetts, and getting these masks from China. Robert Kraft said, "I've never seen so much red tape in so many ways and obstacles that we had to overcome. In today's world, those of us who are fortunate to make a difference have a significant responsibility to do so with all the assets we have available to us." Okay, this is a profoundly happy ending and should take care of even those people who can't forgive Robert Kraft for letting Tom Brady go. When it comes to Arnold Schwarzenegger, he goes to a local hospital to check out some of these $1 million worth of masks that he is providing.
A week ago, we went and we ordered $1 million worth of masks and protective gear for our nurses and for our doctors and medical workers here in the hospitals around Los Angeles. And now I'm here to check out if in fact it got here and if the right mask got here. All of this here is part of the shipment right here to this hospital. And then here, let's just check it out, because we never trust anything. Let's make sure. Yep. The 95 mask. That's exactly what everyone is looking for, to stay healthy and fit and alive. Mission accomplished.
For everybody to stay healthy and fit and alive. Actually, you have to, Governor Schwarzenegger, you have to stay alive first before you could stay healthy and fit. But good for him. And by the way, another celebrity stepping up, and this is not that Gal Gadot kind of stupid thing where they're all singing off key Imagine, which is just what people don't need. I hadn't heard this story. It's happening across the pond in Great Britain. A J.K. Rowling creator of Harry Potter, one of the most successful writers in the world. In fact, I think at the moment she does constitute the most successful literary brand in the whole world. In conjunction with WizardingWorld.com, she's launched three new initiatives under the heading Harry Potter at Home. What's the purpose? To assist teachers and parents now struggling with the task of homeschooling. Rowling, who is estimated to give away 16% of her net worth to charity, had said before that, you have a moral responsibility when you've been given far more than you need to do wise things with it and give intelligently. But this is a public platform for her money and encouraging homeschooling. And this at a time in that story we covered yesterday, it's posted up at michaelmedved.com, of the Oregon Teachers Union blocking the effort of parents to go to virtual classes that are being run by some of the state's charter schools. I mean, really? Saying that parents who have no opportunity in the public schools because they're not functioning at all with the charter schools, which are also public schools, that you can't go there? It's outrageous. But then again, there are more outrages, some on the left and some on the right, but mostly on the left, frankly. I mean, there's an effort by Franklin Graham of Samaritan's Purse to provide a field hospital with 68 beds to help people entirely staffed. It's being attacked by left-wingers for being insufficiently woke. We will get to that story. Gavin Newsom, during an internet question and answer, answered a question about the new progressive era that may come out of this crisis. Here's the governor of California taking a question from a caller.
I'm wondering if you see the potential, as some others in the party do, for a new progressive era, if you want to call it that, in national politics and policy, and whether there's the opportunity for additionally progressive steps, such as the ones that I listed, on the national and state level going forward, you know, because of this crisis.
Okay, and here's the response from the governor of California.
What's the opportunity, to your question, for reimagining a more progressive era as it relates to capitalism? And I'm a capitalist. I'm a small business owner. I'm a job creator. Well, my customers are the job creators. I'm a beneficiary of their support, and that helps build that demand that allows me to hire more people. And so as a former business owner, now governor, I have had that experience, and I have that appreciation of the importance of consumer confidence, consumer spending, and a vibrant middle class. And so, yes, forgive me for being long-winded, but absolutely, we see this as an opportunity to reshape the way we do business and how we govern. And that shouldn't put shivers up the spines of, you know, one party or the other. I think it's an opportunity anew for both parties to come together and meet this moment and really start to think more systemically, not situationally, not just about getting out of this moment, but more sustainably and systemically to consider where we can go together this historic moment if we meet it at a national level and a state and subnational level. So answer is yes.
The answer is a lot of platitudes, a lot of word salad that doesn't add up to anything. I mean, when people talk about a new progressive era and use this opportunity, do they mean that they want government to continue controlling whether you go to work or not? Whether or when you go shopping? Do they want this kind of government control more permanently? Is that really what they want? It's outrageous. And the notion is, if you look at the way that some of, quote, the most enlightened, most democratic socialist countries in the world have handled this, yes, including Italy, including France, including Spain, including even the Nordic countries, in Finland, they are running out of welfare state facilities to deal with the coronavirus. Meanwhile, mass transit. Does there need to be an adjustment during a period of pandemic? Of course there does. We'll be speaking to Maria Frost of the Washington Policy Center. She's the director for the Kohl Center for Transportation. about what's wrong with mass transit in the midst of a pandemic. Coming up on the MedVed Show. On the Michael MedVed Show, I mean, everybody, wherever you live, has noticed that somehow the freeways are empty. The traffic has gone dramatically down. The great majority of the people in this country live in places where there are orders in place for businesses to be closed, for people not to go in to patronize any of those businesses unless they perform some essential service. So what is the deal with mass transit? Because when you think about it, and the ease that with which you can get infected with coronavirus, with COVID-19, by touching surfaces that have been exposed to the virus or by breathing air in an enclosed place, wouldn't a bus be a pretty good place for communication? So is there more that our mass transit agencies could do to protect us in the midst of this situation? That's the question that's asked by Maria Frost, who is the Washington Policy Center's director for the Cole Center for Transportation. And Maria, I understand the buses and even the light rail are still running, but they've cut back their schedule somewhat. Is that right?
Yeah, they finally started cutting back service, so they were very, very slow to do that. They started out by wiping down handrails, putting up posters, letting people know of healthcare guidelines. They were very reluctant to make the changes the rest of us were making and other businesses in our region. They have started to reduce service. Of course, we've heard about King County Metro and Sound Transit and others across the nation, but I think that those service reductions could in some cases be steeper, but more importantly, should be coupled with creative partnerships with safer transportation options.
Okay. If they cut down services, doesn't that mean, assuming they have the same number of riders, just more riders on the same buses and more of a chance for transmission?
The ridership declines have been quite high, upwards of 70 and 90%. And while it is important to space riders apart, which is one of the reasons that there have not been complete service reductions, and that's not what we're advocating for, I don't think they're having a problem with crowding. They might in New York, but New York is a totally different animal. You could definitely, I don't think it would be appropriate to have service reductions in proportion to ridership reductions in New York without providing people with a better option and actually having people take that option before you take the step of reducing service. So it really has to be done on a case-by-case basis. What's great is there are a lot of companies in the private sector that are starting to step up and provide those options without waiting for transit agencies to partner with them to do so.
Okay, and what you write about, and I would urge everybody to go to our website at michaelmedved.com. If you click on the banner, and it's a big banner for the Washington Policy Center, they have your paper about the transit options that could be tried, which sound like very constructive solutions. Give us an example.
Sure. So to minimize exposure to high-touch surfaces and transit stations, which are notoriously not germ-free, I think that transit agencies should partner with taxis and van pools, rideshare vehicles, Uber, Lyft, but also car rental companies like Enterprise and Hertz to provide people with free or lower cost travel options. So in New York City, Hertz actually has already stepped forward, taken initiative to do that. They are providing free car rentals to healthcare workers in the city for the full month of April, which is fantastic. I think that needs to be expanded to other employees and other cities where that is appropriate and needed. In the meantime, for people who don't have a driver's license but who are transit dependent, I think that transit agencies should partner with Uber and Lyft to provide vouchers that would give reduced fare trips so that people can take a trip who are in an essential service like firefighters, nurses, childcare workers, in a vehicle that can be sanitized before each trip rather than every 24 to 72 hours. It can be ventilated. The drivers themselves, this is their personal property. I think they're invested in not getting sick themselves and in keeping that space clean. And Uber and Lyft are doing everything that they can to provide drivers with the necessary tools and cleaning products to be able to meet that need. And so those are kind of the type of partnerships we're talking about.
Which makes a lot of sense. We have a caller from Tacoma, Maria, who just rode on mass transit. And Ron, you had a wonderful experience, did you?
Oh, you can say that. My experience.
Yeah, tell us about it. What happened?
Yeah, I'd say it was less than exciting. I broke down for a week, and it occurred to me that never in my life will I be running on a bus again. And I'll tell you why. Keep in mind, this is before the sickness came out. Are you aware that in this state, as in most, that you can't run a business without having restrooms available for the customers? Let me tell you a lot of fun when you get on a bus at a bus stop at any of the places for HOV, any of that. All these thousands of people are riding the buses, and there is zero restroom facilities for anybody but the bus drivers. They literally got it locked to where nobody but the bus drivers can use the restroom. This is unbelievable to me, and I will never run on a bus again.
Wow. Okay. Do you know anything about restrooms in public buses in the Seattle area? Maria, I assume you do.
I'm not aware of specific examples, though I've heard of multiple problems at transit stations across the region where it's not even just an issue of access to a functioning bathroom facility. There are also problems with drugs and other activities that are being done in bathrooms that make them a serious health issue, which is another reason I think those partnerships with rideshare vehicles and with car companies that can provide you a personal vehicle is a good idea. It gets you from your house directly to your job, so you don't have to stop anywhere or take an extended trip that would require you to have to find a bathroom somewhere and interact with other people at a time when we are being encouraged to really stay at home and social distance as much as possible.
Speaking of social distance, is it true, and I've been informed about this, and actually I've observed it on the two occasions when I actually rode on our light rail, that homeless people sometimes use, particularly in wintertime, the light rail and other forms of mass transit as a place to hibernate or rest or stay warm?
Yeah, and that is a problem as well, especially during
it's
a major,
be a
major health crisis.
It's problem in health terms and COVID-19 terms.
Well, absolutely. I can imagine that makes it difficult to clean the vehicle. It certainly makes it more uncomfortable for other passengers who are really dependent upon staying healthy, like our nurses, like my mother, who's a nurse, who needs to get to work and provide care for people. And stay healthy in order to do that. So, you know, I think the moral trade-offs, there's no denying that the moral trade-offs and the challenges that we're facing, the sacrifices that we're being asked to make are really tough and really uncomfortable. And everyone is being compelled to make those difficult choices to protect our most vulnerable citizens for whom this virus is fatal. But I think we all need to be on board to do that if we're really serious about flattening the curve. Public officials can't tell us that this is an emergency and that we all have to stay at home, but then make these exemptions for certain industries. It makes it very difficult to take them seriously.
It does indeed. I think people should take a look directly at your piece on the transit agencies and what they should and must, in fact, do. It's posted at michaelmedved.com, and you can go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Washington Policy Center. Support their great work. We will be right back with the latest from AOC. But the Republicans in the group support school choice, offering less privileged families government help to choose private education. And on the Michael Medved show, of course, politics doesn't stop, even though the Democratic convention has been delayed. They're going forward with the Wisconsin primary. And that was a decision made by the legislature in Wisconsin, which is predominantly Republican. There are anticipations that the Wisconsin primary, where the Bernie Sanders people are desperately hoping against hope for a comeback, could be a complete mess. How do you stage a primary election in a couple of weeks when people are on lockdown? Well, we'll find out, but we're not going to find out whether or not the Democratic convention will actually meet with people from all 50 states and thousands of them. It may end up, I suspect, going the way of Wimbledon, of the British Open, of the Sweet 16, remember that? And lots of other sporting activities that have been postponed. As speaking of sporting activities, okay, I'm not sure what the connection would be with AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. To the best of my knowledge, is not particularly a competitive athlete, but she certainly is highly competitive when it comes to using social media to advance her career and her ideas. And she has just done an Insta story question and answer session on Instagram. And she knows exactly why we are all suffering for the under the coronavirus COVID-19. Listen.
Someone said, do you think if we took precautions earlier than we did, our numbers would be lower than it is now? Yes. I think that if Trump took this seriously, if Republicans took it seriously, I think that if we decided to listen to scientists early, and more than we listen to, you know, people who care more about profit than human lives, we would have taken precautions much earlier and we would have saved lives. We either would have gone into lockdown earlier in some circumstances, or we would have started producing these damn ventilators way earlier than we are now. We would have invoked the Defense Production Act. But because Trump didn't do that early enough, now we're scrambling and everything that is happening late. And every decision that we make late means that people are dying unnecessarily. So understand that people are not just dying of coronavirus. They are dying due to incompetence. They are dying due to poor decision-making. They are dying due to a lack of listening to scientists and doctors. And they're dying due to a crisis and a pandemic of a lack of leadership, not just because of a disease. And so the people who made those decisions, who decided to prioritize profit over human life, need to answer for those decisions.
Okay, nobody decided to prioritize profit over human life. It simply is not true. This is a phony charge. And my challenge to AOC, which she ought to be open to, is, okay, who were the enlightened left-wing voices exactly who called for freezing in place, who called for lockdowns, who called for shutting down everything before it was actually done? Because it took a while, I think, for most officials all around the world to understand the scope of this problem in the United States. And no, we are not an authoritarian country where you can just have one individual say, okay, we're going to now close down the whole country. We're going to put a quarantine around the city of Wuhan with 11 million people. And then the whole Hubei province. I mean, they could do that in China. But who was calling for that in the United States? In other words, it wasn't as if there was a lonely Winston Churchill. Churchill was on the floor of Parliament. He warned against the Nazis. He did. He said, we have to rearm. We have to stand up with them, against them. And but who was the Winston Churchill here? Did anyone hear anything from the squad about the need to basically stop schools, to close down universities, to end sporting events. It all happened. And I think it has happened to the country's long-term benefit. But she has another idea of something that should be tried right now. And this is so, so despicable. Listen.
Has organized a rent strike. That is, okay, you just refusing to pay your rent is not necessarily a rent strike. A rent strike is an organized action, which, you know, I encourage you to research or whatever if you're curious about that. But know that it's an organized action. It's not just like, I'm a rent strike. It is a disciplined, organized action and with, you know, concrete demands. It often requires organizing. So make sure you, you know, do that. But, you know, research and read about that if that's something that you find, you know, curious. But all in all, just have the honest conversation with your landlord. If you need just a break, if you need $500, if you need $1,000, if you can't pay at all, have that conversation. But know that in the state of New York, Cuomo has called for a mortgage moratorium. They can talk to their bank and have that discussion with them.
Okay. The difficulty here is what happens to the landlord. Because for most landlords, if all of a sudden they stop receiving rent, how are they supposed to pay the mortgage on the building that they own? I mean, the lack of any kind of economic knowledge. We know somebody, a single mom who is retired and basically lives on a very, very modest check that she gets in rent for owning part of a building she inherited, okay, from a grandfather. And if without that check, she can't pay a mortgage. She can't live. I mean, Social Security, sorry, is not enough. So what happens? What do? You create the idea that you're going to get foreclosed on in these buildings where people are renting apartments? Who does that help? And then, of course, the real problem here is the virus of capitalism.
But also, I think it's part of a larger conversation about capitalism, because a lot of people's main income has to do with just owning property, which, you know, there are some elements of it where, like, if you are doing repairs and all these other things, it's a nuanced conversation, but it's an area that exposes a lot of income and socioeconomic inequity. So you know, there's so much there, but I'm gonna move on to the next question.
There is no there. What is she talking about? That people own property? So what's the idea? There should be no property. Property is theft. I know that's an early socialist doctrine. But okay, let's say what is it you want somebody to do who owns a building that he or she is renting? Or let's say they own a house, and rather than selling it, it's a little house somewhere, they decided we're going to rent this. And that's going to allow us to live or support our mortgage on whatever place we bought. When she says the whole idea of property, is there something wrong with the idea of property? If a landlord doesn't own a building, an apartment building is being rented, who should own it? I mean, the entire notion is so juvenile. And I know she's turned 30 now. Congratulations. But honestly, she has the thinking processes of a 13-year-old, and not a particularly clear-thinking 13-year-old. We can do better, and we must do better. We'll be talking about the possibility that, oh, I don't know, that the lockdowns could come back even after they're lifted. That and more for this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Most of us have